This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 568. I am Lisa Sheps, and I am joined this fine, sunny, and hot morning by Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
You are listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live at koop.org. Remember, if it's theater, it's on Offstage and On the Air. Please don't go away.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh, yeah.
You can't do me like you done me.
It is Wednesday, June 10th, 2020. On the show today, we talked to Justin Sherburn of Montopolis about his upcoming project, and also City Theater's Andy Burkowski about what he's got going on. Plus, we will discuss a lot of the things around Black Lives Matter, as well as the Pride plays. Stick with us. Well, that's a sort of a solemn way to start the show, Nicole. But before we get into yet more solemnness, let me check in with you. How are you doing?
I'm okay. I'm hot.
Oh my
God. Otherwise, I'm okay.
It's summer here. We are recording on Monday, so this is 2 days before you are listening to this. But it is hot as blazes. It's summer.
I know. We're going into double digits. And I was talking to England yesterday, and when they heard it was 36 Celsius, I thought their faces were going to be on the floor.
Let me just tell you something. I love that you have a direct line to England.
Yes, England. It calls me quite often.
We're gonna spend some time talking about the issues that are happening around racism in the theater. I know we talk about this a lot, and we are more than likely going to be talking about it next week, and hopefully the conversations will just continue on and on. Nicole, did you read any of the Twitter posts and the YouTube posts by Broadway and theater artists around the country?
I did. I don't even think I mean, I read so many, and I don't even think I began to read them all. Like, there were so many. My mouth was on the floor. My heart was broken. My gut was punched. I was a little shell-shocked.
Yeah, me too. Well, I think one of the biggest ones, and maybe I don't think it started it, but it was certainly the most talked about, was Griffin Matthews, who created Invisible Thread. At ART with Diane Paulus directing it, created a video basically talking about how racist that particular situation was. And he referenced Amy Cooper, and he said everybody can be an Amy Cooper. And for those that don't remember, Amy Cooper was the woman in Central Park filming the African-American man who was bird watching.
Yes, she's the one with the dog, the lady with the dog.
The
he
lady
was
with the dog.
Her to put the dog on the leash.
Anyway, there'll be a link at offstageonair.com if you want to see that video in full. But I thought that Nicole and I...
So Cody Renard Richard was the first one I saw, and then I saw him all over the news, and then I saw Griffin's come out afterwards. And those were the two big ones to me that started seeing more voices speak up, and then I started realizing and seeing other posts of other voices.
Right. There's Tanya Perkins, LaChanz, Nikki M. James, Shelley Williams, Audra McDonald, Christian Dante White, Jelani Aladdin, a lot of people. So what I want to do here right now, without commenting on them, because it's not my place to do that, is I just want to read a part of a couple of them. I'm going to read one, and Nicole will read another. And just let that live out there. There'll also be links to these that you can listen to. The one I want to read is from Michael Kilgore, and he called out racism on theater on Facebook. And this is a part of what he said. And just so you know, he was part of the cast of Jesus Christ Superstar Live in Concert, The Wiz Live, Man Born Black, And he was just most recently, I don't know if it's most recently, but he was in Songs for a New World. He was also, which I didn't know, was in the virtual chorus of Dear Evan Hansen. I didn't realize they had a virtual chorus.
Now I was about to say, I didn't even know they had a virtual chorus, but...
Yep, they do.
That's really cool. I mean, I guess I Will Be Found, you kind of hear all the choir, choral. I guess he was, that's cool.
Yeah, so here's what he said. I don't have the answers, but I do know that there are a few things I'm not comfortable doing anymore and hope that I'm not alone in that feeling. I feel like we have got to get to a place where we feel comfortable with saying no to things that have hurt our community with the depictions of ourselves that are one-dimensional. Because there are good and bad and high and low within the community, I'll be damned if I spend my whole life standing in the back row on 12 because, as a director, you haven't found a creative way to include Black people into the world of the show, and that you're trying your best to hide us, and you're trying your best to not have us steal focus. I think an easy way to make sure that we're not stealing focus is to make sure there's more than just one of us. Because you put one Black body on stage full of white people, guess where my eye's going? I hate the use of Black and brown people as props. I hate the idea of colorblind casting because that's saying there's no color, and that's not going to work. There is color. So color inclusive is the way to go. In the same time, I hate All Lives Matter, this whole idea of theater for all and let's create for all. White people have never had a problem with theater being created for them. We don't have to do that. We don't have to serve whiteness in that way. And that was from Michael Kilgore. And what are you going to read?
Was that just part of it, or was that the whole statement?
That was just part of it.
Cody got me. Cody Renard Richard, who actually worked with Michael because he was a stage manager on the Superstar.
One of the
live.
Very few African-American production stage managers out there. So good for him.
Yeah, he's worked on Motown the Musical, Hairspray Live. He's worked in, what's interesting is he's done a lot of the stage and the theatrical live television stage versions. His is very long, so I'm just going to read a few pieces. Community is a word to suggest unity, a word that suggests inclusion, a word that suggests we all share common attitudes, interests, and goals. So many things have been said in the last couple of days, but I want to speak directly to the Broadway and theater community. I've been very fortunate to live in this New York City bubble for the last 10 years and to be part of this community, but racism is everywhere. As much as we don't like to talk about it, it's everywhere. Even our little community of open-minded individuals, if you don't see it, let me paint a bigger picture for you. And he goes on along and I'm going to kind of go to another part. To my non-Black colleagues and friends, please take a strong look at how you move through the world. If you're not actively anti-racism, then what do you stand for? Change starts with us, in our community. If you think you can't affect change, think again. You have the power and you have the resources. Before you ask me what can you do during this time, ask yourself first. It's time to step up. It's time to get and be uncomfortable. Protesting comes in many different forms. You don't have to be on the streets to do it, but you have to be honest with yourself and your core values. Talk to your friends, talk to your family members, talk to your coworkers. Don't tell me you don't know those types of people. You do. You absolutely do. You may very well be one of them. Use your voice now. Don't be silent. Speak up. Be anti-racist. Be human. Love us. We have to do it better. Let's actually create a community.
So, Claire, we have a lot of work to do. So I think we should say, I don't think we have said that at Offstage on the Air, we stand with Black Lives Matter and we stand with anti-racism and we stand with all those voices that are not heard enough and will now be heard.
Very well said, Lisa.
So I'm just going to do a gentle segue into more, not lighthearted, but certainly not as deep, but sticking around the idea of a more anti-racial Broadway. Did you hear about the Apollo Theater?
Yes, to actually make it a Broadway theater. I didn't realize, I never understood why it wasn't. And I guess it meets all the criteria.
It checks all the boxes.
And there's a petition for it. So I didn't realize that it had made all the criteria. There's no reason it isn't designated a Broadway theater.
Well, I think the biggest thing that's standing in his way right now, Lincoln Center is the furthest north theater that is considered Broadway. And it is, 25 blocks north of Times Square.
I thought that was the whole reason. To be honest with you, I thought it was a logistical fact, but I guess
evidently not. So I'm all for it. I think that would be a great thing to do.
I absolutely am all for it too. I've made that comment being in there going, is there a reason why this isn't a Broadway theater? It's interesting. No, that was exciting.
There you go. So let's take a little break. I should say that the piece of music we heard at the very top of the show that I did not say anything about was "Can't Do That to Me" from the Scottsboro Boys, and that was the lovely voice of Brandon Victor Dixon singing. And we're just going to take a quick break and listen to "Change Don't Come Easy" from the Company of Memphis. Here it is.
He told us to pray, some told us to sway.
And we're back.
We are.
Let's talk to Andy Berkofsky of the City Theater about what he's got going on. You want to do that?
Yes. Love that, Andy.
Here's Andy. Well, we're here talking to Andy Berkofsky of City Theater and longtime City Austin Theater personality. And before I allow him to speak, I just need to tell our audience that he just waved, but you can't see it because this is radio. So
you would have enjoyed the wave, trust me.
I would have. Absolutely. Nicole and I would like to welcome you back to Offstage and On the Air. How are you doing?
I'm doing great this morning. Thank you.
First of all, before we get into the project that City Theater is doing, do you have any updates about your, I'm assuming that your search for space has been on hold during the pandemic?
Well, it's a cart before the horse situation, you know, of how much effort and time to put into that, because that could just be 24/7, you know, looking for that space. So I'm kind of doing that at the same time as moving forward with, you know, where we are with the virus crisis and everything.
Sure.
But I have a few properties that I'm looking at. I just have to just put all my energy and effort into that once I take the plunge, you know.
But as we all know, it's a huge plunge.
Yeah, it is a huge plunge. Huge plunge, absolutely. But
what are either of you talking about? Easy schmeezy.
What did she say? I'm sorry.
She said it's easy schmeezy lemon queasy.
I'm being facetious.
Oh, I got you. Absolutely. Yeah, I know.
Opening a theater in Austin, Texas is a simple thing.
No, but you know, but the thing about it too, I'm very well, you know, for the experience that we had, the ups and downs of the experience of the last venue, mm-hmm. and all that experience that I gained in the process is so helpful in this.
Sure.
Moment. No, absolutely.
Sure. So 10 years of can you
not be taken away from me in this moving forward process. So yeah.
Well, we can try to take it away from you, but I'm sure you won't let us.
No.
So can you tell us what area of town you're looking in?
It's central. I mean, dealing with the realtors that property realtors that I've been talking with, I always say, we're not going past north to Breaker, not going past south William Cannon, not going as far as east 183 the Loop, and not as far as west on Mopac.
Okay. So well, I'll tell you what, if I were to be opening a theater again, if I were to move my theater, I would be looking at Lockhart or Manor or some other city that is not Austin.
Well, we had, when you and I had that conversation,
yep.
you know, a few months back, and I understand, that, in normal circumstances, I think you would be able to find your theater community. You know, you may lose what you have now by going.
Well, actually the thought is, and again, it would be, it would have to be a concentrated effort. There would be more than one theater. It's to make another place a cultural destination for Austin to go to.
Oh yeah. And I mean, if you're going to Lockhart, you especially want to work with the community theater there that they have. you know, to, you know, say we can make this happen for all of us.
I would talk to Andy Berkowski, and I would talk to the Rude Mechs and Salvage Vanguard. And I'd say, hey, if we're looking for new spaces, why don't we all congregate in one area and bring Austinites to us? It's just what,
I got you. Well, yeah, I get what you're saying. Not a co-op, but we're going to set up a community somewhere.
We're going to make Insert City a destination for cultural activity for theater.
Well, in that conversation, you know, then, you know, I would say the Austin metro area is wondering why, you know, Pflugerville and Round Rock and Georgetown are booming. And I don't know this as a fact, but it just seems like they're allowing, when you're trying to do set up any kind of business there, when you talk about the code of occupancies or whatever, that it's a little bit more lenient or flexible in getting it. And so they wonder why, you know, this is happening in these communities, which, you know, okay, well, we'll go there. Like you said,
Austin is not very conducive to opening a small theater. Well, we're looking forward to City Theater becoming a venue again and doing all the great work that you do. But in the meantime, during this quarantine process, you've got a great project you're working on. You want to tell folks about that?
I do. Yeah. It's called Austin X. It's a virtual stage talent competition. To get actors and performers, local actors and performers, moving again. Yep. Getting, you know, in this virus crisis, we're all, you know, we're shut down, we're shut out, stagnant. And this is just a very simple, very, very simple way to get actors and performers involved again.
So tell us how it all works.
Well, you know, it's, all you do is, in this virtual world, all you do is submit for the first process to get involved in it, is submit a 5-minute performance.
Okay. And
an audition to, I mean, it could be anything. Could be a monologue you've done before. Could be a collection of poetry. Could be something from a nonfiction, Gilda Radner, you know, that wonderful autobiography that she had about her life, you know, and dealing with cancer. You know, it could be anything. I mean, you submit that and you're on your way to stardom.
And so once I've submitted that and I'm with a group of people that have submitted it, I'm assuming we will be looked at by a jury of some sort?
Correct. It then becomes, the competition becomes then, you know, seeing how many contestants, you know, submissions that we have. And then if it's, you know, I'm shooting for about 100 people.
Uh-huh.
I'm shooting about, you know, I have about 20, 30 right now. But then once we have everybody's submissions, then they get divided into sections or groups. And then a group of judges, professional, you know, theater people, film people, because this is, you know, this could be film actors as well. Then it's a panel of judges for each group. You know, let's say it's a group of, let's say we have 30 people. We have three groups of 10. We have three judges for each group, and then they rank them. You know, they rank the 1 through 10, and let's say then the top three or four advance to the next level, then to the next level, till we finally have our top 6 or 8 or whatever. So,
how many levels do you foresee, and then what happens once we have the top 6 or 8?
With shooting for 100, we should have a quarterfinals, a semifinals, and then a finals.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You know, it'd go from like 100 to about 40 to about 16, then to a top 8. And what's really nice, well, you know, it's, you know, we're kind of forced into this situation, but it can work out very nice, is that there's no, it culminates into a live theater event. At some point in time, whenever we get back into into doing theater live again, if that happens in August, September, October, but it culminates into a live theater event of the top performers.
Great.
The top 8 or what have you, you know, for 2-3 hour event, inviting, you know, an invited audience that comes to see the performers. If we go as far as doing a, what would you call it? A best in, you know, audience pick, you know, it can go that route as well. But again, there is a panel again of, let's say, 5 to 7 judges on that night that then, you know, pick the top 3, you know, of the 8 or whatever.
Can Nicole do her Liza Minnelli impression as part of this?
Absolutely.
Oh, he didn't sound like he wanted that.
I did. Well, I was going to, but here's one of the specifics in that, because there's some, generally speaking, that's all you basically need to do. On our website, there's some more specifics about rules and regulations and how to do it. For example, like what you're talking about with Liza, this is not just as a starting competition that we're trying to, get, formed here. It's not a singers competition, or teens yet, hopefully we can become more, the teens edition or the musical edition or what have you.
So you're not looking for people to like sing show tunes. This is, you're looking
correct,
for people
correct.
To do monologues or scenes or things
right.
like that.
Maybe my show is a one woman show about Liza and her inner turmoil.
Well,
there was no singing.
No, here's what you do though. And the rules, and there's a lot of specifics just to make sure we're doing this right. You can sing in your piece, your performance, but you only get 30 seconds of any kind of singing or musical transitions, or if you want to play an instrument, you're playing your guitar with your performance, as a mood piece. Absolutely. If you wanted to sing 30 seconds of some Liza, of your performance, because you're a damn good singer and you want to show that talent in your performance, because this is what all this is about. Well, then sure, then sing, Liza with a Z for a little bit,
So folks need to go and really look at the rules. Give folks your website.
citytheateraustin.org.
Awesome. Now, I also know, because I've looked at your website, I've looked at the rules. So between the original performance and the next level, you're not looking for me to repeat my piece. You want me to come up with a new piece for the second time, correct?
Correct. That's the challenge in this, is that you're not just doing...
That means when I pass with my Liza, I can come in with my B. Arthur.
yes.
There you go.
Yes. And
let me just tell you right now, there's not enough B. Arthur stuff out there.
Yeah.
No, there's not. A little bosom Bring back buddy. Maude.
Yeah, it'll be Bosom Buddies that you're singing. Yeah, so that's
now that's going to be in my head all day.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, Andy, you don't have a definitive cutoff time for the initial pieces currently.
Well, it's June 20th as of now.
Okay.
Yeah. But I can be, again, we're flexible on that. I mean, I'm going to do another blast this coming week about, hey, the deadline's coming, on social media and everything else. And then, but I may again say, hey, we may, extend it another week, because we don't have to, we're not set on, where our index, because it's almost like whenever we do our first round and then you have to prepare for your next piece, it'll be another at least 2 to 3 weeks in between those as well. It won't be like, hey, tomorrow your next piece is due. You may
have to. Well, awesome. So folks that are interested in participating or getting more information about Austin Acts should go to citytheateraustin.org, correct?
Correct. Yes.
Beautiful. Well, we're almost out of time, but I did want to follow up with one last thing. So do you have, when is your next production scheduled for currently? And I know that's a moving target.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is a moving target. We had... Trinity Street Playhouse. We actually had two spots there for the summer schedule. All right. We just to kind of backtrack a little bit, just real fast. We had 3 weeks of June, which, that has, passed us.
Yep.
We now have 4 weeks in the end of July and the beginning of August. So in my conversations with Anne at Trinity,
Zarate.
Correct. She, they are working with a very unique situation there, being in the church. So, she has told the latest that we talked, and we're going to talk again sometime in the next week or two, that they're not going to open up until, try to open up until the 1st of August. So that leaves us then really 2 weeks in our four that we had. But we've already, so I'm shooting for that. We're shooting for that. We have started.
Wonderful. Tell folks what the show is that you're considering producing
absolutely.
In August.
It's, It's Terrence McNally's It's Only a Play, the comedy It's Only a Play.
You were rehearsing that out at Mueller Field not too long ago.
We're there and outside at Picture Box Studios, where we've done a couple shows, keeping safe, you know, social distancing, wearing masks, hand sanitizer, everything else. And it's working out. It's like our conversation, you know, early, it's, you know, really it's the heat now as well, you know, because we're doing rehearsals 5:30 or 6 until the sun goes down, you know, as best we can. But it's a slow process. But, you know, originally we had scheduled Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf as our starting back show. But we were like, well, I don't know if that's the feel-good hit of the summer that we're going to have.
Well, so, we want to support
Terrence McNally, you know, him passing. And I was very fortunate. When I applied for the rights to it, I didn't think we would get them, you know, because of what, you know, happened to him and stuff. And I was very happy about, you know, it's such a funny play, and I got such a great cast, slow going, but that's when we're scheduled for those, you know, for those first couple of weeks in August.
I think it's a great choice.
I think it is. It's a good, it's a wonderful play.
Well, great. It is a wonderful play. So, Andy Burkowski, thank you so much for coming back to Offstage and On the Air Virtual Edition. I hope you will stick around and join us virtually backstage. All right, that's Andy Burkowski. We'll be right back. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Nicole.
We are here. Lisa, Nicole.
Here we are. As always, we are streaming this at KOOP.org. Let's talk about Pride, shall we? It's Pride Month.
Yes, let's.
So we had Nick Mayo on last week talking about Pride plays, which was to begin last Friday, but they were postponed due to standing in solidarity with the Black Lives Matter. And so their first play comes out this Friday. And then the one that they were going to do, and I can't remember the names of them, so I'm looking it up on my pieces of paper. They have a play every Friday night, starting now, this coming Friday. And the show we were talking about was Brave Smiles. It's rescheduled for June 22nd. You can find that on the playbill.com website. So you wouldn't go at Rattlestick will just send you to Playbill. And they have a whole, tab for Pride.
You just realize it's the first month. There'll be no Pride Playbill.
No,
first year.
Won't. Yeah. I have a whole bunch.
Yeah, I know.
Do you know what happened last Sunday night? Or I should say, you know what didn't happen last Sunday night?
The Tonys.
The Tonys. So here's an interesting thing that was on playbill.com. It's the most nominated artists in Tony history. So I was surprised at this list. Guess who the most nominated actor was?
Actor,
male.
Brian Dennehy.
No.
That's random.
Jason Robards Jr. The most nominated actress was a tie. Care to take a gander?
Audra and Bernadette.
No, Julie Harris and Rita Cheetah Rivera. Remember, this goes back all the time.
Cheetah.
So these are probably not going to be any of our contemporary people. Most nominated director, Hal Prince.
I almost put Cheetah in there. Yep.
Most nominated choreographer, Bob Fosse.
I was about to say, I knew it was Fosse.
Nominated playwright, Neil Simon.
That I knew.
Songwriter had several ties. It's a triplet.
Who's that?
Stephen Sondheim, Kander and Ebb, and ALW. And there is a Pride concert. Yep, it's June 28th. Michael Urie is hosting it. Michael Urie of Pride Place.
He is everywhere.
He is everywhere. Caitlin Kanunen, I can't pronounce her last name, of the Prom will be there. Jen Kalela, Cheyenne Jackson, Shakina Nafak, Matt Gould, Griffin Matthews, Matt Roden, and more. But let's take a little break, and let's listen to Love Thy Neighbor from The Prom, and we'll be right back.
You can't cherry pick the Bible, choosing which parts you want to believe.
We don't do that.
We are back. Love Thy Neighbor from the prompt. See, I'm going with the, I'm sort of trying to get back into having a theme.
I hear it. I got it.
Yep.
I'm getting it.
Oh, you know what? I need to say one other thing before I leave Pride. I totally forgot to talk about this. Did you read the article? I believe it was in the Times. No, it was in Variety. What queer theater trailblazers Larry Kramer, Terrence McNally, and Mark Crowley gave us.
Just a yes.
Wonderful sort of just
so good.
What the three of them did. And this is something I did not know. They were born 8 weeks apart in 1935, and they died 12 weeks apart this spring.
You know what's funny is, like, when I read that, I went, whoa. Earth angels, I like to call them.
Yeah, yeah. Very, very interesting. And they will be missed, and they did more. We've talked about them a relative amount on this show in the past few weeks. But I don't think we can give them enough
Piece was beautiful. I have to tell you, I've actually been in Variety a lot lately. I've read a lot of good pieces like that lately. So
here's something that I did not realize, and you probably did. Hairspray, the creators are now requiring characters to be cast as written. Evidently.
Okay. I did not know this, FYI, Lisa. When I saw this, I was like, huh?
Evidently, up until now, it's been okay to do an all-white version of Hairspray.
Thank you. Yes. You could, or all black. You could do all anything. You could do anything you wanted.
Well, yes, you could do, you know, all black would probably be a little bit more forgivable.
It's such a specific show that doesn't make any sense to
me. Well, so what Mark Shaiman has said, they got requests. What they did was they changed the issue. It was no longer racism. It was things like, what did they say? Diabetes. That was one of the things that they changed the issue that it's about. Thankfully, they're not allowing that to happen anymore. So I think I'm happy about that. Well, let's go now to our second interview with Justin Sherburn of Montopolis to talk about his project and of a movie storytelling and orchestra.
Okay.
Nicole and I are here with Justin Sherburn of Montopolis, amongst many other things. Welcome to Offstage and On the Air, Justin.
Thank you so
Welcome.
Much. Welcome. Pleasure to be here.
We were talking before we went on that we think this might be your first appearance here, although I'm sure you've been on once or twice before.
I feel like you've been on, really?
I have. You know, I have this tangential relationship with theater, so I'm almost surely I've been on your program before.
Well, we've been on for 11 years, so, you know, who knows? So you were doing something really exciting and doable in our current COVID-19 environment. And these are things that you've been doing before. You do live music to film, correct?
Yes. And we've gone more and more incorporating theater as of late. We've been playing theaters throughout the state, mm-hmm. And just naturally that has led us to a more theatrical presentation. We're bringing in actors, you know. To tell stories.
Ah, you know, okay.
In the show, we have a wonderful actor named Jared Donnelly, who is kind of a cowboy, poet, narrator.
I know all about that.
Yeah. And it's so much more engaging, you know, for like a broad audience, you know, and it's great, you know, so you have the visual element, you have the music, and then you have the storyteller.
Okay. I didn't know that. Now I know that.
I love this, adding all this together, all these different elements. This is cool.
Yeah. And for Living Coast, we have a wonderful actress named Emily Perzan, who is telling stories and relating scientific information.
Great name. So now I looked at the trailer for, what's the name of it again? I'm sorry.
Living Coast.
Living Coast. You'd think I'd remember that. I looked at the trailer. It looks amazing. I didn't see any, does the film pause for the storytelling, or is it done over the storytelling?
You know, it's really interesting what I've ended up, specifically because we've been doing these drive-in theaters, right? Normally, we're all on stage.
Yes.
It's pretty much a theatrical production, and the image is above us, you know, like a big movie screen above us. Because we're doing it this way, what I've started to do is actually film the narrator and then adjust the opacity of that image to go over the film.
Oh, okay.
So
figure that comes in over this live, but because the audience can't see us because of we're playing a drive-in movie theater, you know? So it's kind of like psychedelic and pretty spooky because we'll have these...
So it's live without being live. That's so cool.
Well, it's definitely live. Emily is speaking live, but I am... she is on my computer, like facing my computer using that camera, and then that is broadcast to the drive-in movie theater screens, you know? So that part is live, but she's over images of clouds and ocean and all these different things. So it's kind of psychedelic.
Cool. So at the drive-in, where is the orchestra in relation to the screen?
It's different every time. Last Thursday, we played in Buda, and that venue is amazing. It's called Doc's Drive-In. It's in Buda. And I'm telling all the people who I work with that, you know, all the other show producers, that it's a great venue. You should check it out.
I definitely will. Actually, that's closer to my house than Round Rock is.
Yeah, the people there are super nice. Their venue is excellent. And so basically there, we were on top of a two-story structure on a top deck. You know, so we had plenty of space, and we're in between two giant movie screens. And so that's how we did it. And Round Rock, it's going to be a little crazy because they don't have anything. It's a parking lot, you know? So I'm actually getting a flatbed trailer, picking that up from the guys at Blue Genie. And I've got some flats, you know, real simple platforms. I'm going to bring those because it's an 8-piece band.
Right.
You know? And it's just nuts. I don't know. This is the time to be nuts. It's a crazy
it
time.
It is. Well, this is this has really sort of stretched our ability to try to be creative because we all continue to want to create art in whatever way we do it. And everything's different.
It reminds me of the theater in Atlanta that I cannot think of the name right now, Lisa, where they did Titanic.
Yep. I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah.
So that sounds great. And oh my God, I had a question. It like just no pun intended, but it zoomed out of my head.
No, it's my fault.
But I think that's an excellent point. It's like, you know, in these crazy times we're living through, yeah, it has a negative, deleterious effect for a lot of things. But I don't know, the bold battle on and try to make something out of it that's unique and like of the moment, you know, and that's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah.
It's so, really, you know, it takes a lot of energy to do it, but
it does. Know. It does. We are expending a great deal of energy trying to figure out how to get our stuff out there. Yeah. So the piece that you're doing in Round Rock, can tell us when it is again.
It is this Thursday.
This
Thursday, yeah. Please get your tickets. Come on out there.
What time does it start?
It starts at. I forgot about the call to action.
Oh, no, you're good. You're absolutely good so far. So don't worry about it.
All right. It is.
I'll tell you. I'm looking at it. It's 8:00.
Well, it's actually a little bit later. Just so we tell people to get there early, but we can't start until sunset.
Sure. That was going to be my question because it's still not quite dark at 8:00 now.
We're going to actually start at 8:40.
So
I was going to ask about the dark because then I also figured you have to get all the cars in. So that takes a little time. Is that 8 include that? So that all include, I get it now.
Yes, exactly. Just to get everybody settled.
So you have been touring this around Texas. Yes.
We have a little bit, and we have had some wonderful, a few great shows until all this happened. We played Corpus Christi, Texas A&M Corpus Christi. Mm-hmm. And what we do is we, you know, we align ourselves with scientific consortiums, with universities around the state. So in Corpus Christi, we worked with the Heart Research Institute, which is one of the main research and development organizations that focuses on coastal resiliency. you know. So they're a really big organization, and they're really interested in getting their information to the public. And that's sort of our niche. You know, we worked with UT in the same way. They've got a group called Planet Texas 2050. And, you know, there's some real and serious environmental issues that will be affecting the state of Texas in the next 20, 30 years. And these people are trying to get ahead of the game and educate the public about it. But they have a real hard time. Scientists, it turns out, are really bad at promoting themselves and getting their word out. They're terrible. They're boring for the most part. And they don't know how to advertise. And so I help with that.
So there's an educational arm to this as well.
You know, there is. It's not really. I try to kind of lean away from that because it's pretty boring. As soon as you start, like, introducing data, it gets dry and boring really quick. So what I try to do is to be the emotional arm of their message and then turn it over to them in the lobby. So they're set up in the lobby.
Cool.
Where we go. So you can go and talk to a climate scientist. And a big part of what we're doing, which I think that is very rare, is that most people exist firmly inside of their echo chambers. We have the unique ability to reach conservative audiences, really conservative audiences. And so we can get in front of these people with a message of like, hey, everybody loves the coast. Everybody loves to go to the coast and fish and hunt and do whatever you do, liberal or conservative. Let's talk about it and get together. You know, it's a great way to sort of break down that barrier that has been set up for us nicely by corporate interests.
That's cool. Well, so where can folks go to get more information about this show?
Montopolismusic.com.
Montopolismusic.com. Well, let's talk about Montopolis for just a little second. We don't have a whole bunch of time left, but how long has Montopolis been in existence?
I'm calling it 10 years.
Okay.
Our first show was in 2010 at Alamo Drafthouse with a live score to a Russian film called Man with a Movie Camera. And actually, though, our first show really was at the Long Center for a show, theater show called The Red Balloon that we did an adaptation of that film. We did that many years ago, and it was essentially the same, a lot of the same people that ended up being in Montopolis.
Awesome. And you you get city funding. And I just want to know how you guys are handling. So we've all been told that we're going to get between 35% and 75% less than we have in the past. How does that affect you? Well, obviously it affects you, but how badly does it affect you? I guess.
You know, I just adapt. I am really interested in. Broadening my tour schedule, going more national with my shows.
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested in shrinking my performances down a little bit. I think when you're strictly local, you know, you have this tendency to make these big productions that are unsupportable if you're going to tour them, right?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, most of my career has been spent on the road. You know, I toured with various bands for many, many years. And now I'm ready to get back out there with what I'm doing. To do that, I've got to shrink my band down. Right now it's an 8-9 piece band. I've got to shrink it down to like 4 or 5 people on the road in a band.
Sure. Anyway,
so that budgetary thing as far as like paying people, and I'm just going to make a smaller show.
Okay. You know? Well, good. Well, and again, we all adapt as things are going on, and there's just so much stuff going on. Now, the final question I'd like to ask you is, I know you did your sister, Jennifer, is a wonderful dancer and choreographer, and you work with her an awful lot as well. Are you doing anything with Jennifer coming up or recently?
Well, I'm always doing something with Jennifer because she is my next door neighbor.
So, that's great.
Yeah. Yeah, I have you beat. My brother's my housemate.
Oh boy.
Pretty close.
Yeah, we did that for a little while, and then she ended up buying the house next door. But we're always doing stuff together. She's a wonderful ally, and I'm sure that we'll be working on stuff in the future.
Great. Well, we love Jennifer. We love you. And we're so happy that you joined us at Offstage and On the Air. And I, for one, are you going to be going out to Buda again soon, or was that it?
I'm definitely going back out there. It may be a minute before I make it back out there, but definitely gonna work with those guys again.
Well, maybe I will try to get out to the Living Coast on is it Monday? It's the 11th. What did you say?
Thursday
the 11th at 8 o'clock. at montopolis.org, did you say?
Montopolismusic.com.
Montopolismusic.com. Justin Sherburne, thank you so much for being on Offstage and On the Air, and hopefully you'll stick around and join us in our virtual backstage.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Just love that Justin Sherburne. And that movie sounds like a lot of fun, and I definitely want to go to Buda.
I will caravan with you in my car in social distance and do that.
Sounds great. So speaking of social distance, there's several articles that came out about what's going to take us to reopen. And this is all on the heels of our governor saying that we can open today. The day we air on Wednesday is a day that theaters can officially open.
I don't know of any.
None of them. Most of us are waiting until the fall at the very least. But there were some very scary articles. And one thing that we'll come up with some more information next week when it comes out more fully, we sent out a survey to as many people as we could about what will take you to get to go back into Austin theaters. And it was very interesting, some of the comments we got, such as a plastic barrier between the audience and the stage.
Oh.
Complete new air filtration systems, which I believe Zach is doing, but I believe they were doing that prior to COVID-19. But it's very interesting and very scary for those of us who run theaters.
It's interesting. Did you see the New York Times took a survey like that too? I was like, hey, we just did that. And I haven't read the, feedback yet on that survey. I have it flagged to go in and read it.
Well,
but
I have it
was
it
asking
right.
to get, oh, well, of course it. You do.
I have it right here, and here I'm going to read you some.
Okay.
So this is the name of this article is You Live Outside Broadway, Are You Ready to Return to Broadway? So these are people that live outside of New York that come to Broadway.
Right.
Which is the majority of the Broadway audience.
Yeah, I thought it was smart. I was like, well, that's who's coming.
Yep. So Barbara Parker of Miami said, my husband and I talked about this because we miss theater so much. He would go back right now to Broadway as long as people were wearing masks. I would go at 50% capacity. Joshua Chang said, I'm 29 and would be comfortable going back. At all the shows I've been to, people are kind, respectful, and well-mannered. And then we have, and there were a lot of these. Frank Green of Nashua, New Hampshire said, there would have to be a vaccine, effective and viable treatment, checking symptoms at the door, reliable social distancing and protection interventions, significant and effective ventilation, hand sanitizing stations throughout the theater. All metrics for reopening have been reached and maintained for a 12-month period. I'm sure this is not what you want to hear, but my love of theater is not so important that I risk dying for it.
All right.
Yeah. And then the last one I'll read is just a one sentence of this one from Susanna Rourke. She said, I'm not ready to sit in a theater. No reason to. Take your performances to the parks and use bleachers. So yikes is what I say to all that.
I like that people are giving feedback and thinking about it. So, you know, the constant information and the way things are happening, everything is changing at such a rapid pace. The feelings that these people may have on something now could change, you know. It's just such uncharted territories.
Very quickly before we go, I totally forgot to mention Notes from the Field.
I was about to say, can we mention Pipeline and Notes real quick?
Well, Notes from the Field. Go ahead and talk about that.
So Anna Deavere Smith, Note from the Field, after she did it in New York and filmed it on HBO, Zach was lucky enough to be the first, and I think only theater because everything kind of stopped, that had the rights to do the show with a four-person show. They had these great talkbacks and community conversations, and Anna has made the content available, and Zach will be broadcasting all week through the week, just this week only, Notes from the Field, and they will have the community conversation aspect starting Friday. So just that weekend part will have those community conversations. And it's interesting, they happen in the middle of the show, which really makes you think. And they're all the stories of Black, brown, different minorities. She tells these stories of the prison to pipeline system. It's some powerful, powerful stuff.
Very important thing. And there's lots of local people in it, like Michelle Alexander and Zell Miller III. So
Carla Nickerson and Zell Miller and Kristen Woodrow.
Yep.
Those, they're your four.
There you go. And then Broadway HD is streaming Pipeline, Candor and Ebb, on before their paywall. So they're doing that before you have to be a subscriber. I just went to their website, did not see it up at the before you enter the paywall, but I'm sure it's going to be there soon.
Dominique Morasso's Pipeline. Naya, her teenage son Omari, have everything to do with being black youth in the United States in the 21st century.
It's yep.
The concerns of what's going on there.
So we have gone through another week, folks. So remember to do all the stuff. There will be a backstage today, so please stick around for backstage if you're listening on the podcast. If you're listening on the airwaves, why not get the podcast?
Yeah, you just go to offstageonair.com. You enter your name in the little mailbox and put your email in, and voila, Lisa and I just appear. You don't go looking for us. We come right to you.
We just appear, or you could subscribe at iTunes Podcasts. And, of course, if you do that, make sure you leave us a review, a good review. Darn it.
A good review. Tell us that you love us.
So let's go away with Randy Rainbow singing his latest Bunker Boy. Here's Randy Rainbow.
Guess who's hiding in the basement? It's that coward.
The curtain has just come down on that melodramatic, very serious play, COVID-19, the pandemic. And we have sulked our way backstage. We're down the stairs. We're next to the virtual dumpsters. We've turned on the smell-o-vision, and we have both of our guests that are joining us here backstage.
I know. It's very exciting. And Justin's first time. We talked him into it, virtually and all.
There it is. Well, let's listen to Justin right now.
Okay.
Well, here we are virtually backstage by the virtual dumpsters with the smell-o-vision on to make sure that we have a realistic aroma.
Justin, you have been very consistent and good with that those smells, Lisa. I'm very proud of you.
Well, we have the technology, so we may as well use it. Justin Sherburn.
I know.
Has joined us back here. Justin, welcome to you. Now, this, I think, is your very first time backstage.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I would definitely remember this.
So
that's what everyone says.
It's hardcore back here, man. This is where they're
really... It's a little hardcore. So this is where we like to learn a little bit more about you. So tell us your story. Did you grow up here in Austin?
I grew up in Fort Worth, and then I came to Austin about 22 years ago.
To go to school?
I went to UT for a year as an English major, and then I got a gig with this band called 8½ Souvenirs. It was kind of a swing band. And,
yep.
And then I went on the road for about, I don't know, 2 or 3 years, and it was way cooler than anything else I'd done before. It's kind of like... done after that. I ended up going back to UT, but from then on I was like, I want to play music for a living because it's really fun.
Well, I know I enjoyed watching you when you were playing with Jennifer on one of the dance pieces that was at our theater, and just watching the watching you work, and it had a very theatrical feel to it. And you clearly have a vibe a little bit more than a musician that's just playing the notes.
Sure. And I think that really comes from being so involved with narrative. And like, I was an English nerd, you know, at UT. That was my real interest. I wanted to be a writer. I wanted to be a journalist and, you know, a fiction writer back in the day, but I just happened to find my, you know, way in the world.
Do you write for yourself right now?
You know, I haven't, but on that, but the thing is, like, the further I get into putting together shows, the more I'm going back to my literary roots. The next show I'm doing, I think, is going to be pretty much all Walt Whitman. It's going to be
Leaves of Grass.
Reading, Walt Whitman and a lot of the, you know, transcendentalists and a lot of that stuff. So it's going to be heavy, you know, poetry, English nerd stuff.
Awesome. Wonderful. Have you ever done, so we concentrate here at Offstage and on the Air on theater. Have you ever done theater?
Well, sure. Like,
as a performer?
No. As an actor on stage, no. But I've done music for a lot of different people. I, you know, worked with David Yackel and Tony Groove Theater for a long time, then Trouble Puppet Theater. And so I've done a lot of theatrical productions.
Yeah.
But never on stage as an actor.
Well, maybe we can change that for you.
Sure. We were talking about shrinking down shows earlier, and I thought about, like, okay, maybe I'll just do the reading part myself, the acting part myself. I'll be Walt Whitman, and that saves me one more person on the road in the van.
But there you go.
You got to pick your battles. It's like, I don't want to do that. There are people who have trained their whole lives to be actors, and they're real good at it, and I'm not. Even though we'd like to think that we could do it, nah.
I relate a story back when I had my production company. We were doing a video and we needed a really quick voiceover. And I said, well, I've done voiceovers lives a lot. I get a lot of compliments. I'll just do the voiceover myself, save myself a few $100s. And yeah. I went into the studio. This is back when you had to go into a studio. And after the 20th take of doing this 2-sentence piece, I finally stormed out of the studio and said, hire someone. It's hard. Yeah. It was like, it's like, Lisa, stay in your lane.
Yeah, it's not easy.
No, it's not easy. So how has this, how has the COVID-19 epidemic, not necessarily how, but how are you holding up during the epidemic personally?
I don't know, man. I go back and forth, honestly. I want to talk to more people about this, but we were talking before we recorded the other thing about, at some point I just gave up on the idea that I was going to be functioning at full capacity during this time.
Yep.
I was really, I think we all, try to overcome and say, you know what, I'm not going to let this stop me. I'm going to move forward and make the most out of this. But at some point you have to say, man, there is so much going on that I can't possibly work at the same level that I was working at before. It's just not for that in the history of the world and our nation. And you have to just put some of that stuff away for a little while and tend your other stuff. So I don't know. I'm trying to do my best. I can sort of set myself up for when this, flows through and next fall, next year, just like everybody else,
Do you have any lofty goals for once we become free again and be able to live our lives as we did before?
Well, I've been trying to set myself up to go more and do more national touring. I got a van. So
you keep it down by the river?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, good.
I have a van down by the river.
You eating government cheese.
No, it just feels weird to buy this vehicle for touring and then not be touring. Just basically put together a new show that will be more accessible. So I'm dealing with trying to, work with presenters on a more national scale. And you tend to think that what you're doing is not super weird, but then you get in front of the general, go to shows like APAP and stuff, and you realize what you're doing is super fringy and weird.
Well, that, I would take that as a compliment.
Yeah. But, I'm trying to do something that's a little more that I can tour, and work with these different people. So anyway, that's what I'm working on. I'm working on putting together a show that's sort of what I've been doing about with places in Texas, but it's more national parks, and it's more involving Walt Whitman and music, and it's a whole new thing. And my first sort of adventure out with that will be, I've got a residency. I got a national park residency at Acadia National Park.
Oh, lovely.
Well, then Lisa knows I love a national park. You better get your park passport stamp while you're there. Get your park. If you don't have a park passport, you can get one and then get your stamp.
Oh, yeah, I will. I will do that. So I got that, and so I'm going to go up in September to Acadia and stay up there for 2 weeks and start writing that music. So
that sounds awesome. Justin Sherburn, thank you for joining us backstage.
Thank you.
so much, guys. Thank you.
We hope to see you back here again someday.
You betcha.
I'm so glad Justin joined us backstage.
I know. I didn't tell him, but you know, he was in that 8.5 Souvenirs. They're on a few soundtracks of some of my favorite movies, but my old colleague used to work with them back in New York. They're the real deal. I really love them. It made me excited.
We do. We like having the real deal on the show.
Yeah. It was a fun little fact to learn about them.
Yep. Okay. And now let's listen. Let's go join Andy, who also braved the virtual dumpsters. Here's Andy.
It's always a good time out in the dumpsters with Andy.
All right. We're here in our virtual backstage. We have our virtual dumpsters complete with our smell-o-vision going on to make sure that we have the right aromas. We have placed Andy virtually into a puddle of unknown liquid. How are you doing, Andy?
Oh, it's rough. I didn't think I was going to be in this unknown liquid on a Saturday morning. I was in it last night.
Yeah, well, there you are. Well, that's a whole
other story. I should have told you to wear your welly. Sorry about that.
So, first of all, tell us how, I mean, this is where we talk to you personally. So, how are you holding up during, now we are having two crises going on. How are you holding up?
I'm doing all right. Yeah, I'm doing okay. Professionally, you know, we almost have to my whole thing with all when all this hit, you know, mid-March was, you know, how are we going to reinvent what we do, you know? And that's where my head goes to,
right?
You know, as a theater professional, you know, like, you know, like one of some of the stuff that you during a ground floor do, you know, we put old productions up for people to see, you know, as far as, you know, to keep them involved, you know, the Austin Acts thing, you know, that we're doing. Because it's my thing is let's keep arts in motion. That's my tagline to go to, because that's what I want to do. I mean, I'm as a TK, I got to work with my hands kind of guy. You know, I always want to be doing something, and like in my backyard or whatever, working on a set or, you know, being out with the actors doing, and it's driving me crazy to, you know, I don't know about you guys, but it's driving me crazy to be stuck here at home. And, you know, family wise, you know, I lost my father. He passed away at the end of January.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
You know, thanks. You know, so personally speaking, I've been having to deal with, you know, taking care of stuff with my mom, who's still with us, still with our family, who's in El Campo, which is about, you know, 2.5-3 hours away. So, you know, that has been a hurdle.
El Campo, as a child, our lease was there. I know the Prychicks and all that. I just can't believe you said El Campo. You made me think of my dad.
Yeah, there's a lot of Czechs. Yeah, there's a lot of Burkowskis and Urbanowskis and Puchowskis. You know, and yeah, so
since my dad's passed, I haven't really gone. So,
gotcha. Yeah, it's still there. The little town, it's about 12,000 mm-hmm. people. You know, it's a small little farming community. You blink on 59 if you blink going through Victoria and Edna and, you know, Sugarland, you'll hit miss it. But I'm doing okay here.
Great. So we're interviewing you via Zoom. So we get to, you know, we always, everybody on Zoom scrutinizes people's background. And I notice behind you, you have a poster of The Lion King that's very lovelily framed. Is there any significance to that? Or do you just love The Lion King?
Well, there's a bunch of them back here that I've had, that I had framed, a lot of show, you know, show, what do you call them?
The lobby at your theater.
The lobby, the poster, yeah.
The lobby at your theater.
In one aspect, when I was teaching, we did Hamlet for, you know, a couple of one-act play, you know, contest productions. And we were always drawing that parallel between Hamlet and The Lion King, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that, especially when the movie came out. So there's that, you know. Also, the production is just, you know.
Yeah, it's beautiful. So one of the things that we're asking people during this pandemic when we come backstage is your thoughts on this. I believe, my personal belief is that theater requires people in a room together with the performers. Otherwise, it's not really theater. And of course, Ground Floor Theater, along with others, have been doing things virtually. How do you feel about that? Do you think theater could survive if we're only online?
No.
Okay, well, thanks for being on the show.
Well, my thought always, and you know, it can go a lot of different ways in how you discuss it. When you talk about theater, and then you attach, you say theater arts. Because when you say theater arts, it can generalize it a little bit more into the educational aspect or whatever. But the key word is also arts in that, and the process of what art is. So that goes to the, always like to use the example, if you know someone paints a painting and they stick it in their closet and no one ever sees it, is it art? So you know, that's left, you know, that's the mm-hmm. you know, the example of that. I believe art is a process, and that a painting is a painting, and it doesn't become art until it is, there's a reaction to that piece. That
well, you know, Sondheim says art isn't easy.
Well, yeah, yes, correct. You know, whether you watch that person dance, you read that poetry or whatever it is, it has to evoke a response for the definition of art to happen as a process.
Okay.
Fair enough. So, you know, that's what I'm saying. When this, and then what you're talking about was, it needs to happen in that people coming together and sitting on the grass somewhere and somebody.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, because that energy between the audience and themselves, and the actors in the audience, and the whole room together is, I think, vital.
Absolutely. And I, like last night I was watching, I'm a big Marin Mazzie fan.
Who isn't?
And so I was watching, I was getting just my Lynn Aaron's Stephen Flaherty kick last night watching Ragtime clips.
Of the Ragtime.
Once on this island. And I was just, and you know, when it was the example of, it was one of the performances that she was doing Mother in for Ragtime. And it was a live performance, you know, just a clip of that, you know, the audience going crazy at the end of that, whatever. And I was feeling it, in that performance because of the close-ups and everything else. But then I stepped back and I went, if I was there live watching that, I'd be like, oh, you know what I mean? I'd be like, this is a moment that it's only mine with this group of people, you know?
It's funny. Mom and I were talking about yesterday about how, like, we're so happy we were there in the fall to see some of the shows before stuff closed down. But we talked about when we were at Tina Turner, the musical, that we sat and chatted and experienced so much with every single audience member around us. I could tell you everybody's name and where they were from and who they were, because we were all sharing our experiences, and we were all talking before intermission and after. We stuck around and hung out, and that's missed.
Oh, absolutely.
It's missed a lot.
Absolutely. Well, and, you know, and the idea that people come together, whoever they may be, have made this decision in their lives, their even busier lives now, to say, I'm going to stop and go to this place, you know, for 2.5 hours to experience this piece of dance or this piece of theater, and stop what I'm doing to go do that and enjoy that moment with whoever, you know what I mean? The audience members don't go, I wonder who's going to be there. Or, you know, did someone, you know, who do I need? They come in to share that moment with whoever they sit next to, the actors afterwards, you know, if they come out to talk. Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Well, Andy Berkowski, thanks for joining us backstage.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, we love our Andy Berkowski.
He just, you know, it's always a good time with him.
I really do hope he finds a theater. We miss having him as a theater venue operator.
I know. Man, he always has such a positive outlook on things.
It really
That I wish I could bottle some of that and take it with me.
Yeah, we'll see. Well, let's you and I venture back into the theater and close everything up.
Yes.
All right, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Au revoir.